Hello everyone, this is a compilation video taken from episode 10, and I have taken the clips where Tommy and I spoke about BYU and put them all together. Hopefully that provides you a shortened, more condensed version of what we talked about that still hits all the high points about BYU in particular, which is what we were there to talk about. If you found this interesting and informative, I would love it if you shared it or left us a review. I'm Luke Hansen, and this is Red Pill, Blue Blood.
There's been a lot of talk in politics about how unnecessary college is. And even though I'm probably going to go do a master's degree, at this point, sometimes I'm just say, you know, school right now is just getting in the way of what I want to do. But I do also understand that it's a good plan to have a degree as well. I'm not saying that you should quit school, but if you're a gender studies major, maybe you could consider quitting school or just switching majors.
I don't think they have that at BYU.
We have women's studies.
Yeah. Is that a major or just a class? It might be a major.
Yeah.
It's probably at least a minor. Yeah. College, it needs a overhaul.
Yeah. I think basically all the humanities degrees need an overhaul. They need to bring it back from social justice and all this grievance paper or grievance oppression type stuff and bring it back to philosophy. Like I took a history of psychology class and it was amazing. Like we talked about Socrates and Aristotle and how it applies to psychology. And then we talked about Carl Jung and all these different people, how Western ideals kind of led to the realm of psychology. Cause there's a few different philosophers who are also psychologists. Like Carl Jung. And
philosophy necessarily is part psychology, even if you're not officially a psychologist.
Because basically when you're trying to understand people, you're trying to understand their moral value system as well, and also how that develops over time. That was one class that had the subject of humanities that I was very interested in, because I think the professor knew a lot and he knew what he was talking about. But I think that some humanities, like I took a sociology class. It was kind of for fun, not gonna lie.
And is this just like basic sociology?
It was current social problems. It was it was the one with Lopez. The one that I got that we posted the assignment from. It was that class, but I never had that assignment. I was just in that class over 2 years ago. You have to fulfill a GE, I think, with it, so I took that class. I kind of took it because I wanted to get back into politics after the mission and get a refresher. So why not go into a really liberal class and get a refresher on politics and have to defend myself, I guess, and defend my views. So I think that a lot of the, like sociology, there's problems with the psychology department. I wouldn't say you should get rid of psychology because psychology actually is useful. But some parts of it, I'm just, why are we talking about gender theory right now? Stuff like that, or race-based mental health. It's like, stuff like that.
Race-based mental health.
Yeah.
Oh, that's another can of worms.
I haven't gone into that. It's only a minor, so I've only been introduced to some of the topics that are in the minor.
Race-based mental health is a minor?
No.
Oh.
So, like, that's a topic in a class.
Got it.
That's also part of the major or minor. Like we talked about differences in mental health between people of different races.
I want to go back to this like overly compassionate thing, especially the fact that Detod Christofferson touched on it.
Yeah.
I think is important because this kind of brings it more local to BYU and the church. In the church, and I think in the world, people might say, oh, men are accepted for being toxically masculine, the culture. It's like, I don't think that's actually true to that extent. If you hear the complaint that men are toxic and in their masculinity more than you see the toxic masculinity, that probably means society's not in favor of the toxic masculinity because you're hearing the opposite more than you're actually seeing it. But we're both in the church and in society on the problems that men can have. Mm-hmm. But if we're going to take it as, okay, we're all children of God and women are great, but they're not superheroes. So if there are things that Satan and society can do to men to hijack their natural inclinations towards protection, that can be turned into violence, or a sex drive can be turned into addictive behaviors like pornography. We're very aware for that for men. Mm-hmm. Doesn't it logically make sense that there must be something for women that their natural inclinations can get hijacked by society and Satan and go off on a bad direction? Yeah, and what are those? Yeah. We've kind of hinted at it, but I think it's this overt, compassionate.
It's overly compassionate. It's you're fine the way you are. I mean, that's traditionally feminine traits, but I mean, there's women who aren't traditionally.
Yeah, we're talking bell curves here.
Bell curves and distributions. In terms of just traits in general or cultural values, I think that if you were to make a scale on, say, a scale of the two principles of you're fine the way you are, you need to improve. I think the society has tipped too far to the you're fine the way you are side.
And I think that's driven mostly by females.
Yeah.
That push. You can go on Instagram and anytime at girls all over the place, people like Julie Hanks. I'm not going to call her Dr. Julie Hanks. It's just Julie Hanks. Or you can see it with like other
just like the
mid-sized
feminist movement in general.
I just saw a quote unquote influencer video maker says she's a member of the church. 3/4 of her pictures are selfies and half of those are her in a bikini. And then she puts this post out like, oh, people were telling me about modesty and trying to shame me and all that stuff. But like, and then it was just the typical normal blah, blah, blah. You do you. Great the way you are. God loves you. Personal relationship. Figure it out for yourself. You get to decide stuff. And she's like, oh, no, I'm being attacked by all these people. And I'm not saying she hasn't been, mm-hmm. but that post got twice as many likes as anything else. Tons of comments, the clappy hands, the hearts, the love this, the OMG, I needed this right now. You know?
I literally hate the clappy hands.
Don't you ever put clappy hands on our posts. The BYU conservatives. No, I'm joking.
Okay, you can put clappy hands on there, but just know that I don't like it. You don't make your point go across any more effectively by clapping.
But if like society is trying to be really repressive to you and judge you all the time and stuff, then why is your Instagram post that complains about that the one that gets twice as many likes as everything else?
I think it's just the way the culture is right now. Like if the scale thing, I guess, if you were to go back to it, we're just too far on the you are fine the way you are side.
But people are pretending like we're too far. Way too far on the judge side.
The judge side.
Like, people judge each other all of the time. It's ridiculous. It's everywhere. Oh, and then this post of me complaining about it gets twice as many likes as everything else. Whoops, how did that happen?
Yeah,
my judgment of society still holds true, though. Don't believe otherwise.
I know. No, it's... I think there should be more activisms, quote-unquote activism, from conservatives at BYU. Mm-hmm. Just because I think that a lot of conservatives... don't, and this is not to offend any conservatives in our audience, which is probably our whole audience, but mm-hmm. if I offend you, just, it's whatever.
Take your clappy hands and leave. No.
I think there needs to be more, and our follower base probably is more along the lines of being more involved in politics, but I think there needs to be more pushback at BYU with a lot of the woke stuff that is happening,
mm-hmm.
because... I mean, we talked about it was the pro-life club that couldn't get, that wasn't getting approved.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And
the race, equity, and belonging
race, equity,
report.
And, belonging stuff.
And it's not like things like race, equity, and belonging are that bad, but it's when like the first paragraph of the report says this report was commissioned because of the shocking racist murders of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor that bring to light the deep racism of the blah, 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 and BYU is somehow involved in that. It's like, okay, well,
See, you lost me on the very first paragraph.
Yeah.
And you also lost the justice system because none of those charges were ever brought. So, like, I mean, we're not living in reality anymore, and we're only on the first page of this 67-page-long report.
They hadn't been brought at that point, but
And they commissioned these. The report came out a long time after George Floyd. It was, like, 8 months later. But when it was first commissioned, not a lot of stuff was out. But it's just, like, it was still a really bad situation. But the more things that came out, the more it, the narrative just was not, but they just stuck with it anyway.
Yeah.
And so
that's what they did with Michael Brown too.
This report that's coming out 8 months later, like while the trial is going on practically, mm-hmm. or just before it, is still like, oh yeah, they were totally racist things. And that's the whole reason why this report got started was because of those mm-hmm. catalysts. It's like, oh, so you're, the full video came out. We can see, he said, I can't breathe. At least a dozen times before he was ever put on the ground, and we're just gonna still stick with this narrative.
I mean, if you look at there's different video from a different angle, and it doesn't, he's more so on his shoulder than his neck. Like, I think the Ahmaud Arbery case was more so along the lines of racism, because I think the guy, I can't recall exactly, but I think they used the N-word in video beforehand or had on their social media or something.
That one is different.
That one's different.
But it's also the only highly publicized case that didn't involve the police.
Yeah.
And this isn't really related to BYU, but it is in the sense that, those were like what was cited as the reason why we're bringing all sorts of this kind of CRT flavored stuff into BYU to begin with.
Yeah.
I did do a podcast on the Race, Equity, and Belonging Report. That is episode 3. So if you want to check out that or just go read it yourself, you can do that. But let's actually just get right into issues at BYU. How leftist would you say BYU is?
I think it's minimal, but it's overblown, I think. Because I guess we post about it because I think it's more so in the faculty of BYU. There's people who will just say white people are racist.
Mm-hmm.
And teach even Rex Kendi and how to like teach that, and then white fragility, and then what's the other? So you want to talk about race. Like, I've seen those as required readings for several classes. And I think it's definitely centered more in the humanities, sociology, that type of thing. And then even my wife had to read So You Want to Talk About Race for a math education class.
And you've read that one, correct?
I listened to it on Audible.
Okay.
But
so. My wife read, she got through about half of it, and I got through about 30 minutes of it. So I'm familiar. Familiar as I want to be.
She literally just rips on her mom in the book.
Yeah.
Like, because her mom was white. So you want to talk about race. I don't remember.
Ijoma Oluwu.
Something like that. But she just rips on her mom because her mom had said something to a coworker, something along the lines of, oh, I have a black daughter. I know things about race. And then her daughter talked to her, like, Ijoma, what was it again?
Huh?
The name again.
Oh, Ijoma Olu?
Ijoma, yeah. She talked to her mom and had a conversation about how she was being racist. And then she talks about this in the book. And I'm like, you know, you can talk about things that are racist, but you probably shouldn't rip on your mom in your novel that's going to sell thousands of copies.
And to add on to what you're saying, if you do decide to complain about your mom and call her racist in the book, then maybe that's not a book that BYU classes should would want to have as required reading.
As required reading. Exactly.
Yeah. But sometimes you embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people embrace it. Like, there's a guy that was on radio with Eric Bybee a while ago and has posted some stuff on an Instagram page called Stop Your Silence. I think his name is Don Izakor. And he came to the United States to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
From Nigeria. And at first he said, I was like, what? They're talking about race all the time. But then he just like, something about the way he was introduced to it, he just like fully embraced the, if you're a black person, that means certain things about you and oppressed, that people assume things about you. And well, it's funny because he said what he didn't like was people just like assuming stuff about him because he was black or like noticing that he was black. So you might say, oh, we should be colorblind. Oh, no, he can't be colorblind. Ryan Gabriel told us that is Satan's plan, is to try to make us colorblind.
Colorblindness.
God is colorblind, but because society isn't, justice. Satan tries to make us colorblind like God is, which is bad because society, it's like, it's a whole tangled mess.
Like, why do you think the...
But that brings it to, like, the problem with BYU. Where do we see the opposite message of that being shared at BYU?
Oh, yeah.
We had it a little bit with Amy Chua, mm-hmm. which was good.
Yeah.
I noticed that a lot of the... Because I try and, like, follow the other side, I guess you could say, specifically about BYU. Hardly anybody at all talked about her form address.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably because she's somebody who is a Central. Little bit on the left, I would say, yeah. slightly, at least maybe socially. And then she's saying, the people on the right, their main problem is they have some neo-Nazi racist rallies mm-hmm. in Washington, D.C.
Which are few and far between.
And then her complaint about the left is... Tons of people in institutions and tons of best-selling books tell white people that they're racist just for being white. It's like, okay, I think... And she says, oh, both sides
and have... And that's taught in university.
Like, both sides have equal problems. It's like, okay, both sides have equal problems, but I think the problems can be equal in severity, but unequal in prevalence.
Yeah,
and being a neo-Nazi's as severe as thinking all white people are racist, but one is definitely more prevalent than the other.
Yeah.
There's two halves of me that at BYU wants to approach this, because on one hand, I think, oh, we should, like, reach out. We could probably, through the page, find somebody who knows somebody that's black that thinks these same things as we do mm-hmm. about BYU. And they can come out and say, I don't like anti-racist being taught. I don't like Ijoma Olu.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to talk about race being taught. I don't like people thinking I'm automatically oppressed. I don't mm-hmm. like... You know, there's probably somebody like that at BYU.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of want to do that to give them a voice and present kind of the different side and to break this illusion that all black people think this way. But at the same time, I don't want to just like go find a black person yeah, to say the things that, you know, but it's kind of either or. I kind of did that to an extent with the article that we just put out, that I just put out, talking about LGBTQ stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I met James, mm-hmm. the one of the people that gave a comment, and we'd already talked about that, and he like volunteered that information to me mm-hmm. when I just met him recently, so I felt comfortable reaching out.
Yeah,
but his comments were very insightful, like people thinking, and I mean, if you're gay, you might have this notion that you speak for the whole community a little more than if you're just an ally, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But even if you are gay, you don't like... A gay student in BYU, you don't speak on behalf of everybody. You speak for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he made the point of saying, people who try and speak on behalf of me actually cause me more isolation
mm-hmm.
when they say that I can't stand up for the church policies, when they're trying to destroy the accreditation of the institution I'm trying mm-hmm. to get a degree at.
Yeah.
It'd be a little inconvenient for him if BYU happened to lose its accreditation, his degree doesn't mean anything. I don't think that would alleviate the problems that attend mm-hmm. to you when you're a gay member of the church.
Yeah.
What are some things going on at BYU? Not necessarily classes, but do you see any sort of policies that you think need to change at BYU?
The honor code, rule about beards. I think it's unnecessary at this point.
Yeah, it was brought up in different circumstances than we're living in now.
Yeah.
The beard was like a symbol. And
yeah.
Yeah. But that's not really like woke type
stuff.
No,
that's not woke stuff.
That's
BYU stuff.
There are two things that I was just made aware of yesterday that BYU changed. Mm-hmm. Apparently, in following with Elder Holland's talk, which I was happy because I didn't think that anything had happened mm-hmm. due to Elder Holland's talk. But one was they used to do diversity, equity, and inclusion trainings somewhere on campus.
Yeah.
It was a girl that like worked with this company, and it was a BYU student complaining that after Elder Holland's talk, they stopped doing trainings with them. So that was something that was happening. That's no longer happening.
I think that's great.
That I think is good. You can look at other places to see why we're saying that's good. We're not against diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yeah. It's just that diversity, equity, and inclusion are amorphous terms that can mean a lot of stuff and so happen to be most of the time left-wing ideology and woke stuff.
And then the second policy that was recently changed that I didn't know about, it was in the Tribune actually, the Salt Lake mm-hmm. Tribune, is that BYU, they have a speech clinic apparently that gives free services to students. And I wrote this up in the article. Back in February, they decided to stop giving care, I'm using quotes, to people who were gender transitioning, trans people. Mm-hmm. So the church handbook says transitioning your gender results in disciplinary action. Like, mm-hmm. you're not supposed to do it as a member of the church. Yeah. And then the tithing money goes to BYU. And then BYU provides free professional services to people to do the transition that the handbook tells them not to. I don't know how this was happening. I don't know how this was happening before. So I'm happy that that one changed. Mm-hmm. We could work on the forum speakers a little more, which is something that we discussed. Because Ryan Gabriel, Bishop Robert Barron III or something like Robert Barron. I keep trying to call him Robert Barron. Mm-hmm. But that's like a muckraker back in the industrial revolution type of term. What is his name? Bishop somebody. Barber. William Barber.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so Ryan Gabriel, William Barber, and Martin Luther King III, and then like a couple other people.
Yeah.
The problem is they'll just like say something. They'll like slide something in there. And it's just implied that if you're a good person, you believe this.
Yeah. Like you should think that we should use the government to heal all poverty in the nation.
Yeah. It's always use the government, climate change, voting rights, poverty, racism, please something.
Yeah. Anti-racist.
Anti-racism, the trainings, gender affirmation, whatever, just all that stuff. And they won't explain why the other side is wrong. It's just like, be a good person, and therefore support this. And they just kind of like slide it in and move on to the next topic.
With the I never said the quote from the How to Be an Anti-Racist book. Mm-hmm. The exact quote. It says in the book, you guys can look at this yourself, because you brought up Gabriel and then anti-racism. Mm-hmm. I just thought about it. It says that if discrimination is producing equity, then it's anti-racist. If it's producing inequity, then it's racist.
And this is Ibram X. Kendi.
Yeah, this is Ibram X. Kendi. The only way to remedy past discrimination is present discrimination. The only way to remedy present discrimination is future discrimination.
So it's just equality of outcomes at any cost.
At any
including
cost.
Discrimination.
Yeah, and you don't talk about the Asian population who makes more than whites. Mm-hmm. In America. And it's only economic. Mm-hmm. Like, they're only looking at economic outcomes. They're not looking at anything else, I guess. But if you really want equality of outcome between all the races, then you're going to have to do a lot of coercion and force, because people also make personal choices. Like, blacks are overrepresented in Africana studies. Mm-hmm. But also, Asians are overrepresented in STEM. And I think whites are overrepresented in business. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it should have anything to do with anyone's race when they choose a major, because you should just decide what you want to do. And of course, if there's a culture in a major that is toxic for someone, I think that because of discriminatory culture, and I can't name one that I know of at BYU.
But yeah, well, BYU is probably the best, because it would appear, and they've done research on this, and Jonathan Haidt talks about this, that conservatives are the ones that experience the most problems. This comes from like self-polling. Mm-hmm. So it's like your opinion about how you feel. The conservatives but they are more likely to say that they don't want to speak their mind as much and all that kind of stuff. And even I was talking to people recently, because that's the fun thing about the Instagram is we get a talk with people. And there are a number of BYU students who are conservative who feel that way. Even though BYU is more conservative, they don't want to rock the boat in their classes, especially if it seems to go against what their professors are saying. And this is in a variety of places. I've heard it in education. I've heard it in some business type stuff. I've heard it in humanities. It is very odd that people with kind of conservative views are telling me, and maybe their personalities are a little different, but like, why are they telling me they don't feel comfortable just saying stuff that they think is backed up by the facts in a class at BYU? So it is a problem, it seems like. But maybe it's kind of a problem with conservatives being, we're a little too cautious, maybe. Or people went to BYU just thinking everybody's going to be on the same page at BYU because we're all members of the church. And then they get there and they're like, oh, wait, it's not. And that freaks them out. I'm spitballing here. I don't know if that's what or...
Or it's just people don't want to speak up. Like
just general agreeableness.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say it's agreeableness. I think...
There's a difference between being agreeable and thinking, I'm going to get a bad grade if I say something.
Yeah.
But I don't think you should be thinking that at BYU either.
Yeah, I don't think you should think that either. I mean, I in that sociology class, there were a few times where I questioned my grade on some stuff, and I complained about it, and my grade got raised on it. But I think people have to speak up more because if you don't say anything, then it just gets worse, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are afraid to get graded down because of your viewpoint... Like, which would you rather stand for,
I guess? Like you're not really learning in that class anymore. So what is its purpose?
Yeah, exactly. And so I would say, but I wouldn't bend to the professor's desires if you know that it's wrong or if you feel that it's wrong because you want to be able to express your viewpoint, especially in classes where that's important and there's discussion. Or there's supposed to be discussion, because I know that that happens in classes too.
Mm-hmm. What do you see in the future for BYU?
What do I see in the future? I think BYU either has to... Well, I think either the church itself is going to bring down the hammer on BYU with some of the stuff that's being taught, or BYU will do it itself. Or they will just get kicked to the curb by the church and not have church funding, and then... It'll become a university, like Intermountain Healthcare became, because the church was in charge of a lot of the hospitals. And then after a
while... This is news to me. Really?
I think so. I think...
Like it owned them and now it doesn't anymore?
I think so. I think Greg talked about it.
I think this is... Maybe he did. But I think this relates to a question that we got from people, which we will get to. We've kind of touched on a lot of them now. But, do you think BYU should stop getting tithing money? And they reference Mormon 8:37-38. I don't know quite what they're referencing off the top of my head, so I'll look it up. But what first thoughts if somebody says BYU lose tithing money?
I guess I'm torn because some of the things that are being taught at BYU definitely aren't within the purview of the church.
What would you say are the big things?
I would say CRT. Critical race theory stuff, like even Rex Kendi, I don't know why that is even considered academic literature. Mm-hmm. Like in the first, this is the, in the definitions, the first chapter of the book where he defines racist and anti-racist, he says, as to define racist, it's an idea or policy that is racist, basically. And I'm just saying, you didn't define the word. Like that wasn't, you just used the word in the definition. That's a self-fulfilling...
It's a circular...
Circular definition. And it's like, you are teaching this at BYU. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then it says that you should discriminate against people because of past discrimination. Like,
it's not even being taught at BYU because some people say, oh, people should be presented with different ideas, mm-hmm. even if some of them might be wrong. It's like, well, you only have a limited amount of time to teach stuff in the school, so you need to prioritize things that are going to be useful, and things that are wrong are not useful to prioritize. Yeah. But in addition to that, that but isn't even
only,
what's happening.
It's the only thing that's being taught.
It's being in the classes that talk about this kind of stuff. That's what's being taught. Like the Kennedy Center had How to Be Anti-Racist as their book. And Ryan Gabriel, I'm not like letting the cat out of the bag. This is already out there publicly that he said this. So I'm not harassing people for those who might be confused about that. And he's holding up the book and he's in his spirit voice that he likes to talk. And apparently he used it during like his entire form devotional that he gave, and it's like, this book teaches, I think, can give us a new view of Christ and his mission as a change maker or something like that. It's and like, I hope your testimony has changed and improved, and I hope you can go to your parents and tell them the ways in which your testimony of our Savior has improved. Increased. And he's like holding the book up, you know, practical wise saying, it's like, this book develops your view of Christ beyond what the scriptures do, and you need to proselytize that. That is very disturbing. It's definitely worthy of tithing money being withheld.
Yeah.
I actually found the verse that he's referencing. It's, what's the verse? Yeah, it's Mormon, you know. So, behold, ye do love money and your substance and your fine apparel and the adorning of your churches. Oh, ye polluters, da-da-da, why are you ashamed to take upon you the name of Christ? Why do you not think that greater is the value of an endless happiness than misery which never dies? Okay. I'm not necessarily saying that's Ryan Gabriel, mm-hmm. but I would say that BYU doesn't need to lose tithing money. I would say BYU needs to change. And yeah. if that means losing accreditation or other stuff, kind of like Elder Holland says, mm-hmm. then that's what we should try to be losing, because education and education involved or incorporating the spirit and the scriptures and stuff like that is very important. And BYU is one of the few places that you can get it.
Yeah.
So we should, if something's going to get cut off, it should be the official accreditation and praise of the world before the church should just cut BYU off. Because yeah. it takes a lot of tithing money, but it's still serving a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, I mean, I think that this is to emphasize the point of tithing money being used to sponsor BYU. Because the business school literally said, I don't remember who I heard this from, but the business school literally said to BYU, hey, we could go independent because the business school is just, the business school is freaking insanely good at what it does. Mm-hmm. And the church came out, came and said to them, no, you can't get off of tithing money because we want this to be a church-sponsored school.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really important because the symbolic meaning behind tithing is so that, and the actual meaning, not just the symbolic meaning, it's that this is given up to the Lord to improve the kingdom of God. And mm-hmm. if that means educating people who are in the church, then that's a good place to put it in. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying also that we shouldn't change, because I do definitely think that we should change so that tithing money and that education can continue without principles that are antithetical to the church. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they should be not necessarily not taught, but I think that they should have another viewpoint. Like, you're not going to find Thomas Sowell's Race and Politics books mm-hmm. in all of these sociology classes when they teach you COT. Because mm-hmm. if you taught discrimination disparities, it's so much more academic than something like how to be an anti-racist. He cites stats and figures like almost every other sentence.
Yeah, long bibliographies.
And it's very, very academic and it's referenced.
What caused the 180 degree change in culture here at BYU? So I think what they're asking is, maybe they went to BYU before, or maybe they're here now. I don't know. But kind of like this idea of everything was perfect in the 1950s, and then suddenly everything got reversed. I can't really speak to what BYU was like a while ago.
I have no idea.
But even since I started here, because I started before my mission, so it's been like 7 years since I started BYU. And it does, these conversations are not things that I was cognizant of or aware of or anything when I was a freshman. It doesn't seem like it was like this before. And I think part of what you have to understand is it would seem kind of odd if just BYU came up with this internally by itself mm-hmm. all of a sudden.
Yeah.
That would be very odd. You have to remember that this is the way I kind of am thinking about it these days, is the students at BYU are in BYU. They mm-hmm. live and breathe BYU. Some of them live on BYU property. They might not leave BYU property for an entire week or two. But professors are not like that. Mm-hmm. They teach maybe 3 classes max, sometimes less than that. And sure, they do a lot of prep for their classes and grading and answering questions and all that kind of stuff. But a fair amount of their time is also spent teaching. Researching. And when they're doing that, they're interacting with other professors outside of BYU. The professors aren't in the BYU bubble, even though they're BYU professors. And so sociology, and Jonathan Haidt has talked about this, things like sociology and law and education and other liberal arts have really taken a turn in the past decade. And this is objective. It's not like subjective opinion. Like, the number of conservatives has dropped off dramatically, and it's become very orthodox.
Mm-hmm. I think it's 83% of people who are in sociology are either liberal or Marxist.
And the BYU professors are doing research and writing papers with these people and, mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. So it probably came mostly from the professors, Mm-hmm. Although social media has really come to the fore in the last 7 years or so. And there's a lot of political stuff that happens on there. Mm-hmm. But if I were to say, first of all, did BYU do a 180 to bring it back to the question? Kind of. It seems like. Kind of. Where did it come from? Mostly the professors, I would think. Mm-hmm. But students who, I mean, when you're a freshman, you graduate high school. I'm not saying they're stupid or anything. There's great people that are freshmen and really have their head on their shoulders and stuff, especially if you're an RM. But you haven't been exposed to this level of idea. Well, not mm-hmm. level, but this category before, because mm-hmm. you were focused more on basic econ, government, math, English, Shakespeare, that kind of stuff. And you've never heard of critical theories or systemic this or that before. And so when it's taught to you at the beginning and you're saying a prayer before and after class, and the professor might be saying something like Ryan Gabriel of, and this should help strengthen your testimony of Jesus Christ, especially if you're coming into it as like, BYU is the greatest institution in the world, bar none. It's just a completely spiritual, amazing experience. And then you hear that, I don't, like, your sensors are probably way toned down and you might just kind of eat it. And it has a very nice activism, save the world flavor to it, which is mm-hmm. very appealing to young people. Yeah.
There's a psychological term for that. I think for the lack of a better term, it's like a savior complex. When you're younger, you want to change the world.
Yeah.
But then when you grow up and pay taxes, you quickly realize that, oh, I have to do a lot of stuff to change the world. And also the world, as it is, has a lot of good, but also I have to pay taxes.
Yes, it's a miracle that we are where we are right now. Yeah. Like, we should be very careful before we try to change it.
Yeah.
And you just, it's the professors being an authority, and they're the main authority figure that you're dealing with mm-hmm. at BYU. And then maybe you have an activist roommate, and then it's just like a new thing and you haven't really heard the other side before mm-hmm. for some students. I think that is just like kind of the triple threat. I actually haven't really met anybody who, while they were at BYU, became aware of all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm just like talking off the top of my head and making up this person in my mind, this like mm-hmm. imaginary freshman that comes in. And although there has been letters, mm-hmm. I haven't gotten them because we don't like talk to parents a lot.
No.
There's a couple, but somebody like Quick, Greg Mattson, will get letters from concerned parents, or Elder Holland read a letter from a concerned, I think it was a parent. No, mm-hmm. she was talking about her friend, that things like this do happen at BYU. And I'm just kind of trying to guess as to why it might happen.
I'm not sure exactly why it would happen. I don't think that there's been... I've heard of studies done that says that it doesn't really change people's views, and then some that it does. So I guess this is inconclusive. But
what specifically?
College changes people's views.
Oh, really? Some say that it doesn't?
Some say that it doesn't. Some say that it does.
Hmm. But how do you think that people who are very much in the gospel and active and all that stuff can be introduced to CRT and say, ooh, sounds good? Like, how does that, in your opinion, how does that happen?
Carefully with euphemisms, like critical race theory, be an anti-racist, like read this book.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you're in the gospel and you hear something like, we should be anti-racist, and you're like, perfect, sounds awesome.
Sorry. It just means you should be against racism. It's like, I mean, if you want to define it that way, then everyone should be an anti-racist. But that's not how it's defined,
mm-hmm.
as per what E. Rex Kennedy says, because he's kind of the arbiter of the term. Mm-hmm. I think it was around before him, but he really emphasized it, and now it's everywhere. So that's he's kind of the source,
mm-hmm.
is what I've come to conclude. So if you really want to go to the source, he doesn't say...
There's a lot of other people, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of other
Stefanchik. People. Wait, that's one, right?
Stefanchik.
Delgado. Crenshaw. And then if you zoom back a little bit, you've got the Frankfurt School and Gramsci and Marx.
But that was more critical race theory and the anti-racist
That's term. Where it came from.
Yeah. That's where it comes from, but I don't think the anti-racist term came from that. I may be wrong on that, but...
I do understand how people who are strong in the gospel can start to go along with CRT.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if it's done slowly enough and with enough euphemisms, you can kind of get deep into it.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think for some people, they will, and they have like come to a point and they're like, oh, wait a second. Like, this is not, this doesn't make sense. Another question that somebody asked though was, have you seen any success stories?
I know of some people that have done it. Like, a guy we know has changed people's minds by just asking them simple questions like, is race, do you think there's other factors besides racism that contribute to unequal outcomes? And then people will say, yes. Okay. Is this disparity racist then? Or is it just a result of racism? Like, because you agreed that racism can result in unequal outcomes, but then there's also other factors that can result in unequal outcomes.
Yeah. It's not hard to find a couple of examples.
So how do you then differentiate?
Yeah.
And I know that he's had success with that because he's talked to us about it.
Nobody's ever like come onto our page and said, I read some of your stuff and changed my mind.
Yeah.
That hasn't ever happened.
I feel like it's because it's a social media page. Because social media pages are really poor conduits to change people's minds.
Yeah, something like BYU Conservatives, you have to be realistic with what you're expecting from it.
Mm-hmm. It's difficult to change people's minds on social media. Mm-hmm. Because you go down a thread and you have like a bunch of different comments and then you get into an argument and you say, I'm going to have the last word. No, I'm going to have the last word, basically. And then you just try to punch down to each other. But the real way to change people's minds is just talking to them face to face and then bringing up points that they would agree with that also align with your views. Because there's a lot of, I would say, cognitive dissonance. And I'm not saying that the right doesn't have cognitive dissonance, but just cognitive dissonance as a whole on the left saying, like, and that's summarized by the whole what is a woman thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then people can't answer it.
I'm going to bring this back to BYU again, and I'm actually going to do it. Why in the world, and I'm going to do it in a good segue type of way, why do BYU professors have and are allowed to have pronouns in their bio? First of all, is that a fundamental rejection of the principles of the Family Proclamation to the world?
It is, but I don't think that they think it is at times.
Yeah.
I think people just find it to be a polite gesture.
Yeah, I think it's
on surface.
I'm nice. This seems like a nice thing, and therefore no further thought is required.
Yeah. Well, like a girl in one of my classes, she said, it's so easy to just put your pronouns in your emails. It's like, yeah, it's easy in action, but ideologically, no, that's not easy.
That kind of is what makes it, that should be like the red flag that it might not be the right thing to do.
Yeah.
If it's just
if it's so easy, but a lot of people aren't doing it, that's probably a reason why.
Yeah. If everybody's doing it and it's really easy, then it might not be the most virtuous thing.
Yeah.
Or the most correct thing, the most aligned with truth type of thing. If you were the king, the supreme ruler of BYU for a certain amount of time, for a week, like what would be your like your fantasies of what you would want to accomplish?
I would have teachers, if they're teaching critical race theory, to also teach Thomas Sowell, Discrimination and Disparities, or something along those lines. Because critical race theory, it literally says, like, one of the facets of it is challenging liberalism, like westernized, Western
classical principles. Liberal.
Classical liberalism.
Yeah.
Not big L liberalism, small L liberalism.
Which is why so many liberal professors are also angry about it.
Yeah.
I guess I'll say, if I was supreme leader of BYU, American heritage teaches about America, tone down the econ side of it, teaches about America and the Constitution, original sources required for all students. You cannot get around it.
My professor...
Like students can now.
Yeah. My professor, Grant Madsen, he was my American heritage professor, and he was fantastic. I thought he balanced both sides along the lines of traditional American history versus like some of the viewpoints that people have now about it. And I think it was just very balanced politically as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a great job. Probably the best lecturer that I ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Really hard class though. He said that he helps design the LSAT.
Mm-hmm.
Really good professor, really good lectures. Harder tests, they're application-based, but just very balanced in how you presented everything, and I thought it was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would... American Heritage required possibly a second semester of American history slash heritage. Like, ah, oh, you get it in high school. It's like, no, I don't care. We're still going to do more of it. Studies have shown that people decrease a lot in their knowledge of American history while they're in college. Mm-hmm. It's not, like, taught that much. And so if you're going to lose a lot of the information like the studies have shown, you can take another year of American history and we'll kind of do, like, a deeper dive into stuff, especially the Cold War. Understanding that a little better.
I think the
atrocities of the 20th century.
Yeah, I definitely think there should be something along
the lines. And what it means. Mm-hmm. Woodrow Wilson, the bureaucratic state, the expansion of the federal government, the expansion of the judiciary, judicial fiat, that is necessary. We'll get rid of some other GE class in there. Socratic method. Socratic method and practice required for all students as part of GE, and we'll knock off another GE class to keep that. Well, that doesn't have to be an entire class. Focus on Western civilization, where you actually read some original sources instead of just kind of talking about them in an overview type of way.
Yeah, Grant, Madsen had a lot of original sources, like you brought up.
Yeah, we read a couple of Federalist papers in my American Heritage class, and I, even being an engineering major, I'd be fine. Like, no, you don't have to take college algebra again to pass like some quantitative reasoning, or you don't need to learn, you don't need to take like Chem 105 to pass some sort of science stuff like that. I actually don't find that to be, if you got it in high school, then I think you're fine. But this like classical logical thinking, American history, that kind of stuff, I think is the most necessary. And then no pronouns in your bio, but I'm going to be a generous dictator. If you could provide me actual evidence to show that it's helpful in some strange way, and it's like solid research, not just like this wishy-washy, oh, people feel nice when that, people don't feel nice when they see your pronoun. Maybe I'm being too flippant, but like, seriously, you're like an LDS dude working at BYU and you have he, him, like who is like, oh, thank goodness. Like when they see that, like so who's,
now I know how to address you in my email.
When has anybody's day significantly improved after seeing pronouns in your bio? So, and it's not just that they're not useful, but it's that they're not true. Mm-hmm. It's advocating a position that's directly against one of the core tenets of the church. Mm-hmm. And we can rely on our faith to inform us that if you're doing something that goes against the truth, then it can't be helpful in the end overall. And then I would crack down harder on the dress and grooming standards, because nobody ever enforces them ever.
Don't be afraid to express your opinion, and don't be afraid to stand up for the truth, because if you don't, then who's going to, basically? Because I had, in some of my classes, I've had like 10 or so people just come up to me afterwards, say, hey, I really like when you talk in class. I feel like my views are actually getting a voice too.
Or that, okay, there's or a success
that,
story.
Or yeah, that's a success story. Or even people that are on the left saying, hey, I actually like when you talk in class because there's actual discussion, not just what's being talked about that I believe in. And I've had that discussion with people left, right, and center, because if you're not going to do it, who's going to, basically? You have to have that. You have to take on that responsibility yourself and think that way, because there's going to be other people who agree with you, and they, I mean, they'll back you up sometimes, possibly not in the, well, it depends on who it is, I guess, because not everyone's as informed as you are. If you're asking that type of question, and if you're prepared to answer two different leftist talking points. But there's definitely people who are going to agree with you, and you have to stand up, basically.
Yeah, I think once you do it, then it doesn't seem as bad.
Yeah.
And if you're nervous, the question route is like totally the route to go. How liberal is BYU? Overall, the students, like we said, not very much, but the liberal views are expressed very often and get a lot of traction outside of BYU.
They're a lot more prominent, and I think it has to do with that there's not a lot of pushback on it.
Yeah.
There's a concept known as the spiral of science in communications. Basically, if there is a chilling effect because people don't want to address something, then it just gets harder and harder and harder to address over time. And that has a negative effect on culture. That doesn't have to do with policy per se, but it has to do with just upholding cultural values. And if you don't uphold them, then they're going to get attacked.
Are liberals, are woke liberals only going to BYU to try and challenge the culture and push their agenda? All right, so I don't know which group this person's talking about, but there are professors and then there are students. Mm-hmm. And I don't think just because you are woke necessarily means you are trying to, well, you are trying to change the culture.
But I don't think you're seeing it. Here for this purpose.
Yeah, I don't know of anybody who only came to BYU to try and do that. Although there certainly are a number of people who kind of their primary mission, the Black Menaces are one of them, seems like one of their primary missions right now is to change the culture at BYU mm-hmm. towards woke stuff. And professors are kind of the same to an extent. There are a number of professors that on their Twitters or in class will just outright say things like BYU needs to change this, BYU needs to change that, usually with things like transgender policy. So, and like we put in the Kruger Chronicle, there are people that literally went to an accreditation meeting and said, BYU needs to lose its accreditation.
Why would you? As a student, that seems like you wouldn't want to say
it's
that.
It's not biting the hand that feeds you. It's like chainsawing the hand that feeds you.
Then you don't.
The hand's just gone. It's not there anymore when you do that. Right. Should BYU get tithing money is the next question. We've already talked about that. And why can Belizers of the Gospel agree with CRT? We already talked about that. Cool. We're so efficient. Look at that. It only took us 2 hours. All right. Thank you, Tommy, for coming. This was a good conversation.